Howdy, howdy, y'all.
Hey, guys. You found Lee and Deborah Core, Team Libra Podcast.
Welcome. And we got a big surprise this
week.
Fun
news.
So I know a guy who builds websites. And
me too.
Yeah, do you? It's probably the same guy.
Probably.
Well, he just got done built. Okay, it's me. It's me. So we just got
Spoiler
done.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, we have a new website, teamlibra.com, teamlebra.com. And you can see all of our podcasts, and you can see our most popular ones also. Go visit it, share it with your friends, catch this new ones. And this podcast, of course, is going to be on here. It launches, and looking forward to it. Oh, on our website, you can leave, you know, there's a form on there where you can actually drop us a question if you'd like to, or you can go straight bypass all that, go to our email address, teamlibra@gmail.com, and drop us a note. Ask us a question.
Yep.
Tell us something. Yep. Tell how cool I am. no? Okay.
Well, and one thing I liked about the website, too, is that he has all the listening avenues, if you want to call. So it's got Spotify. It's got Apple Podcasts. It's got Amazon
iTunes,
Music. So, yeah.
All that stuff. Yep.
So for sure. Yeah. Just really cool to find your favorite way to listen.
So we know the guy this week.
Yeah. I've known this guy since the day he was born. It's my little brother.
It was fun.
Yeah.
Very really interesting conversation all the way through.
Yeah.
What was it about?
Well, I mean, just kind of his journey. So, you know, starting off as growing up years like Southern California boy, moving to small town Missouri, and just all the shenanigans he got into.
The popular new kid in town.
Exactly. Yeah. So anyway,
then he went to Marine Corps, and he and I were able to chat up on that side of it, because that's a little bit better connection for me. And he was a loadmaster on C-130. That's a great job. That's a funner job than what I had, because I slept in the mud all the time and he was flying above us. So
he loved it. You guys will get to hear about that, but
it's a great story.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And then just a little bit about what he's up to these days and just some fun things that came full circle, which I'm really excited about for him. So
you know what,
but we don't want to
they
give
probably
it
want to know about
know.
It so I know they I can't hear it if we keep talking.
I know, so let's just go. Well, welcome, John, my widow butta.
Hi.
Hello, hello. Thanks for joining us here.
Yeah.
I know. We say join, literally join. He drove the long 45-second drive to get over here.
In the rain.
In the rain. That's even more dangerous. Nice chilly rain.
I gave myself a full minute.
Because
it was traffic.
Way to build in.
Franklin traffic's pretty heavy.
What do they call
that? It is kind of, if you get down the road today, on Georgia Road it will be.
Oh, yeah. Everybody headed back from their mini vacation into the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
That's our traffic. What do they call? Oh, margin. Way to build in margin for that drive.
Yep.
Just in case. So we are going to just hang out and talk to my brother this afternoon.
Yes.
There might be some things that surprise you about him. So I'll try not to share too many secrets, because this could be like, you know, reveal
might have to change your rating.
Reveal all, because obviously, we did grow up together.
There's a little sparkly thing on your microphone that I saw all day yesterday. And I was like, I got to clean that off when we get done, and did not. So today I was staring at it again.
Just do it right in the middle. Yeah. So I will say.
You drag us along through the first part. And when we get to the Marine Corps side,
you guys will take over.
Yeah, it'll be a little bit easier.
I know. I'll sit back
right
and
now,
just
I'm
be
just
entertained.
Listen and interject as we go along.
So I will start off by saying, obviously, known this man my whole life, and he actually, I consider him my birthday present when I turned 4, and I literally remember, so our birthdays are 2 days apart.
Boy, you got big birthday presents. Luckily, you didn't get this kind of birthday present every year.
Oh, yeah. That would have been a lot. Hey, we do birthdays big. I think that's what started it, birthday number one. So, but yeah, so he was born actually 2 days before my 4th birthday. And so I still remember Dad opening the door or whatever it was to my bedroom in Texas and saying, "Happy birthday, your baby brother comes home today." So I think
did you know he was being born? I mean, that wasn't like a surprise birthday.
No,
right?
It wasn't a surprise.
Hey, you got a brother.
Whoa. Like, whoa, when did that happen? No. Yes, I knew he was coming up. But yeah, from the time he came home, he's like considered him, you know, like he was mine. So anyway, those are fun stories.
Yeah, she definitely treated me like I was hers.
Yeah, I was quite bossy. And if he wanted to do something that I didn't think he should want to do, I definitely would try to talk him out of it. So I apologize in advance for all that.
Caleb had a advance. Bossy sister as he grew up too. So
yeah.
Audra had that tendency to be
yeah.
wanting to be a school teacher at one point in time.
Oh, yeah.
That's why she was leaning towards, yeah.
I thought definitely played teacher and student.
Yeah. I was going to say, do you remember that?
Many times.
Yeah. Audra would do the same, and she'd be in her classroom, and she'd be wanting to be the teacher in her actual classroom and teaching. The teacher would like have her help some of the students because she'd always get done first. So I thought for sure she'd wind up being a school teacher. She did not. You did.
But I did.
So
yeah.
John was probably a better pupil than Caleb was at any point in time.
Yeah, I don't know. But I remember being bossy a lot. And I look back and I'm like, oh, man, I'm glad we're still friends. Didn't damage us. So, yes, grew up in Southern California. So what are some things you remember about growing up in Southern California? Because I know mid-childhood you moved and we'll talk about that. But
I mean, our pool was a big one. I even had a dream about that last night.
Really?
That our relatives came over, but it was my house this time.
Oh, yeah.
And they were like, they came over and they were ready to get in the pool and it was like full of leaves and stuff and it smelled. I was like, oh, yeah, just give me a minute to put some chlorine in it. Like I was totally expecting them and everything.
Just need a minute or two.
Our pool in the backyard was a big deal.
Yeah.
Typical Southern California thing, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah. What else? We had obviously our backyard. We had like 30 citrus trees. We had a bunch of orange trees and grapefruit trees. And we even had a couple avocado trees that we didn't very much take advantage of.
Fruited. I don't remember.
Which is good. No, they were all over it. We just never used them. I know.
I don't remember. Shame on us. Crazy.
Exactly. Yeah. Now they're like $16 a piece.
I know.
We had them like literally growing on trees.
Were those on your property or are they somebody else's?
No, they were on our property. It was our backyard.
Oh.
Yeah.
A pool?
A pool, an orange grove.
A playground area with the sand.
It was big.
A big rock out in the front yard.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Because you would tell me.
Granite rock.
Yep.
Yeah.
I don't know how big that is because you would tell me it was like huge, but I'm wanting to know from John's
perspective. 4 feet tall, probably.
Okay.
Was it like in the ground or was it just sitting there? It was basically like part of the mountain that they tried to dig out, but the more they dug, the more they realized it wasn't coming out.
Like, this is
so they just left it.
Yeah.
And it was like, it almost had like 3 steps coming up the front of it, the way it was shaped. And then it had like a drop off on the side facing away from the house. So you could like sit there with your feet dangling.
Dangle your feet.
It was
I'm sitting
great.
On a rock here. Move on.
Yeah. Yeah. It was
pretty cool.
Pretty
so
sweet.
You're saying they dug the mountain out. So was the mountain surrounding you where it was, except for where you guys' property was? Because you're saying they dug the mountain
out. I say mountain. I mean, Southern California.
Okay,
so
you're
it
just
was
saying
like,
they dug out for the place.
Yeah.
The like, property. Okay.
Because
all of a sudden it changed my mind. I was thinking it was like your house was sitting here, pool and stuff, and then rock around it at first when you said that. So I was like, oh, okay, that's different.
Yeah. It doesn't really seem like a mountain was dug out or anything to build the neighborhood. It was just like
that rock,
almost like how you have caves that are just going forever and you,
except
so you
the
just
kind
of had, you just kind of had this granite type
caves?
Stuff.
Yeah, I don't get that either.
No, I'm saying like when you get underground into a cave, they actually go on like really far, like miles and miles and miles. So like with these hills and these mountains, that granite stuff, it was all over the place.
Gotcha.
So you have someone building a neighborhood and it's okay, we can get through. All of a sudden you're like, oh, there's this granite rock like in the front yard.
Let's
try to dig that out. But
first
you were
telling
like,
me you had caves. And I was like, I did not hear this story.
No.
There was a secret entrance of the rock.
It was an analogy.
I'm like, this now it just really got interesting. The fruit trees were all right, but
we're going to get into where we were superheroes here in a minute.
That's right. Wonder Twin powers activate.
I was trying to create an analogy, guys. Remember that whole teacher thing? You know, I'm trying to like build a picture.
It was usually help when it kind of
relates.
Yes.
Well,
at that point in time, I was like lost in the story. I was like, you never said caves. I want to know about the caves.
Oh, man. Anyway, so we did live in Southern California. So another thing I remember is it did not snow like hardly ever in Southern California. That's just not the climate. But
so when you say Southern California, you're talking, so everybody knows where you're
between
like
San Diego and LA, basically. Yeah. Riverside.
Riverside.
Okay. Yeah.
If anybody knows where Riverside is.
Even if you don't, you can watch Cops. It's on there a whole lot. There's like a whole Riverside County section of that. Because I'm like, there's a whole episode about, there's a whole week full. Oh, every week it's that area that you lived in.
I can't even imagine because obviously it's been a
very long time.
Many decades. Changed,
And we were we were outside of it. We were.
Yeah.
In the suburbs.
Oh, yeah.
I guess.
I'm sure yours was. It's just a funny fact that it'd be like Franklin.
But yeah, it did snow once at our house.
Yes, which and was a little higher elevation.
My teacher literally called me a liar when I told her that it snowed at our house. Because yes. I guess we were elevated some. So yeah. It was like the hills down there. But yeah, we had snow. Like our neighbors came in and stole our snow to make a snowman. There's like this track of missing snow and they've got snowmen out in their yard.
No, officer, it wasn't us.
This is my snow. We only got this one time in my life and you're taking
it. We weren't going to use it anyway. Yeah. But it was pretty crazy having snow down there.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's funny. Your teacher didn't believe you. Why did you get your homework done today? It snowed at my house. Okay, I've heard so many reasons. That's never going to work in California.
Yep.
Oh, my goodness.
If you only had a cell phone back then to take pictures of it, and then you could show everybody.
Would have solved everything. Yes.
Mrs. Knight, if you're out there, it really did snow. I promise.
So growing up together, it was just the two of us as far as siblings go. And I'd say we got along pretty well together. I mean, I was kind of bossy. If we got into video games in the summer and we ended up playing all day long, it would get a little tense, you know, because of course I would blame him for not moving on in a certain part because, you know.
Or being noisy.
Making a noise.
She would have never died in video games if it weren't for me sitting there.
I literally would say, if you hadn't talked, I wouldn't have died. So ridiculous. But like I said, we played pretty good. The thing I'm most proud of with you and me playing together was playing kickball with two people.
Oh, yeah.
In an effective way.
Ghost Spaces.
Yeah. Yes.
Ghost Runners.
Oh, yep. Yeah. I mean, do other people do that? Yeah. I'm curious. Yeah.
We didn't invent it, I don't think. I'm not sure where we heard of it, but.
I know. I don't either. I just thought we.
It was hard to get a ghost player to steal, though, when you're sitting there and you're like, okay, he just stole third.
Now, baseball coach, we weren't that advanced.
We were passing time. Yeah. No video game. Well, we had video games later. I was like 16, I think, when we got our game system. But yeah, so we did a lot of playing outside and stuff. But yeah, our Ghost Runners, we had set rules. So we knew, you know, how things were going to progress. And that way, we had a little less arguing.
Teacher was very orderly.
Yes.
Even when we were outside at recess. We had rules.
She even corrected herself. She goes, when she starts being the player and the teacher, that gets confusing.
Oh, man. Oh, and then, of course, we must share our incident about croquet.
Yeah.
So croquet was a game that we played as a family quite a bit.
Yeah. And
I'm very competitive.
She's very competitive, I guess. And I don't know, maybe I was overly sensitive. I don't know what the deal was, but we had some kind of a little disagreement and she went to tell on me. So
that he was cheating.
So I chucked a croquet mallet at her back.
Yeah?
Yep.
He did not miss.
I didn't. It is a miracle that she is not paralyzed right now.
It's funny how you don't think of that stuff when you're a kid. You're like, man, everything's normal. I intended to throw that and she's fine, right? Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was being a little tattletale. I was being a little too competitive. He probably like went to hit the ball and like barely touched it, which is now with his kids, if I was playing outside, I'd be like, it's fine. You can go again. But I was not so gracious when I was trying to win.
Yep.
So I was going to tattletale on him for cheating.
Cheating at croquet.
And then assault.
Why are you paralyzed? My brother cheated at croquet. And I was going to tell on him.
Tell me what croquet is. Oh,
it was a very important game. We had a lot riding on it.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. So that was fun.
But, so were there kids in your neighborhood? I mean, was it just you two or what? Were there other kids in the neighborhood?
There were kids my age. I don't know if there was any. There was, I guess, one across the street.
Oh, yeah. What was
her name?
Kyrie.
No.
The Spanish one.
Shiata. That's right.
Yeah. Her parents were from Spain. Ooh. I don't remember how long they had lived there. But yeah, she was a pretty good friend. I would sneak over to her house and use the phone because she had one in her room. And so we would try to call a boy that I had a crush on in fifth grade. And so I would go to her house and do things that I knew I wasn't supposed to do. So. And yeah, it was not very nice of me to.
Well, that's what you do back then.
Sorry,
you're
mom.
The story. Yeah. And now you're grounded. So yeah, she's going to be calling you tonight.
Yeah.
You but still feel bad, right? Look at you. You still feel bad right now telling that story.
But there were some kids in the neighborhood. There was a boy. You remember the boy named Chris that lived kind of down the way? No.
My age?
Yeah.
Oh, there were several kids my age.
Yeah,
most of them were punks, turns out.
Yeah. But, little neighbor across. But yeah, I mean, it wasn't a ton, but there was enough.
We'd yeah.
Tried. Oh, and...
Oh, Chris, the skinny boy that...
Yeah.
That he came over for a sleepover. I'm pretty sure that boy never got to go to sleepovers again in his life. Came over for a sleepover. And so what do? We stay up and we find one of the Freddy Krueger movies on TV and watch it. And then at some point in the night, I remember him calling his mom, but barely because like I was sleeping, but mm-hmm. it woke me up. And then the next morning, my parents were like, "Where's Chris?"
Yes.
Like, I don't know.
He lost him.
And then I think I told like, "Oh, I think he called his mom." And he couldn't sleep. He was having nightmares or he was terrified. He called his mom to come get him. So he wasn't allowed to come over anymore.
I had that happen one night with Audra, one of her friends. It might have been, I don't think it was, I won't mention her name. Anyway, I know it happened one night because we woke up the next morning and the girl is not there. Oh, and God. I'm like, what happened? I'm freaking out just a little bit. And Audra's like, "Oh, her mama came and got her last night about 2. I'm like, "She didn't tell us?" Because like, you know, this is important information for me to wake up. There's 3 girls here when I go to bed. I wake up, there's 2 girls here, and you guys have been sitting. They're walking around eating breakfast.
They're eating breakfast.
I thought she was still asleep in the room. They never volunteered the information. Oh, she went home about 2 o'clock. What? Yes.
Yeah, that's funny. Well, I don't know if you remember. So we lived in just like this little, I say secluded, but there was like a lot of land around our neighborhood because we were not in either city limit of Moreno Valley or Riverside. And there were like a ton of orange groves if you ride your bike far mm-hmm. enough back. And so I know one of the things that we loved doing was taking our bikes and just taking off. We just go mm-hmm. off that dirt road off on the undeveloped land.
Now, were these fruit trees planted or were these trees just because Florida?
So the ones she's talking about, I think, were like cultivated orange groves. I'm not sure why they weren't fenced off or anything.
Right.
Gotcha. I mean, I was a kid.
Right.
But anyway, I mean, it was like rows of orange trees.
But the ones at your house, were they just growing there?
I'm sure they were cultivated too. Like somebody put them there on purpose.
I was wondering if
Southern California just had fruit trees like around just.
No, I'm pretty sure they were intentional.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good climate for it. So yeah, we'd take off on our bicycles and we knew which house to cut through and, you know, had our ways to get back there and we just take off and just be gone for, we'd get in trouble for staying out too long.
That's what it was when we were kids though. We could do that. You can still do it now. It's just parents are a little bit too protective and kids just don't get out like they used to. But when I was a kid and I lived in Iowa, in a small town and, you know, I had 8 to 10 friends, we'd be gone on Saturday mornings and take off and would not be in trouble for not showing back up till that night whenever the lights came on the streets because that's when you had to be home. But you'd be gone all day. And I couldn't imagine now Caleb around 9, 10, 11 years old. I mean, he'd go out and ride his dirt bike away from the house and stuff, but just be gone all day without me knowing.
And
the adventures, not only the adventures, but the stupid stuff you'd get into when you had 8 or 9 kids out on a Saturday just trying to find things to do. I mean, it's a wonder people lived back when we were younger. But what adventures, right?
Yeah, the give and take. All right, so let's see. So we go through school, and I think it was the middle of your, I can't remember, it was eighth or ninth grade.
When we moved?
Yeah.
It was ninth grade.
Ninth grade,
yep. Okay. I got a little taste of California high school, mm-hmm. and then we moved.
What was California high school like? Was it going to be cool? Were you thinking, this is pretty awesome? Is it big? Probably a big school.
It was fairly big. I mean, everything seems bigger when you're young.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think it was like 300 graduating seniors. Okay.
So a little bit.
Do you remember how many graduated in your class?
I graduated with 4-some, but 400 we started something? With 900.
Right.
So you have an idea of how big of a school
it's a couple thousand
kids.
You're
getting ready to go to.
Sure.
Yeah. So, and it was, I mean, it was fine. I was getting into stuff I shouldn't have been getting into and hanging out with kids I shouldn't have hung out with. And
teenagers.
So, yeah, I was kind of getting myself into trouble a little bit and definitely wasn't caring about school. I probably skipped school like 6 days in a row one time, just me and this kid dodging cops and hanging out at his brother's apartment. Just, so... I think part of my parents' goal was to kind of get me out of the situation I was in. Like they had plans on moving back anyway, but I think it was good timing to get me kind of, which it ended up being a pretty good move in general because it did sort of kind of reset me a little bit. you know, and it was definitely a much smaller school.
Yeah.
I graduated with 30 kids.
Yeah.
So it's like a, yeah.
It's the size of our local Highland school. It's kind of a,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was a good, I think it was a good move on their part. But it,
at the time.
Yeah. The timing, what do you mean?
At the time, you probably weren't as happy about the fact you were
there. I don't know. I don't think, I don't think I was unhappy about it. I think I saw it as kind of a, I always enjoyed going, like we would go back to Missouri on vacations because that's mm-hmm. where my parents' families were from. And so I liked Missouri. I liked the stuff we did there. So I think I was okay with it.
Right.
It wasn't like I was super tight with anybody and I was leaving behind good friends. So
just that one kid.
I honestly don't even remember his name. I know what he looks like, but I can't remember his name. But yeah, so we moved to Missouri and, you know, it was kind of cool because I had kind of like instant cool status.
Oh, yeah.
Because like, you know, my mom still knew people from there and their kids were going to school. And so by the time I got into the school, everybody knew about this kid from California who was coming to school. And so here I am, this kid from Southern California. And this one girl's like showing me off to all her friends. Like,
it's like an 80s movie.
This is John. I know him
this
already.
This is my new friend.
Yeah.
This is like an 80s movie.
It reminds me of like yeah. Remember the Titans or you have like Sunshine, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. So that was kind of cool. And, you know, my dad, I'm not sure what prompted him because he didn't give advice a lot, but he said, don't talk or something like that. He's like, basically told me like, keep my mouth shut and don't say too much. I don't remember exactly what he said to me.
Keep your cards close.
Basically, so I would just go and I would be quiet and I would wait. And like, it worked. It, you know, kids
the
liked me.
Mysterious
and
mysterious
yeah,
guy.
I was a mysterious guy from Southern California and ended up having really great high school life. You know, did some really fun stuff. Didn't get in too much trouble. You know, made really good friends and had some, I mean, And out there in Missouri, it's kind of like we were in Southern California out. It's a small town. And so, like, we would go out and find I remember we found an abandoned house and just hung out there one night. And then I had a friend, Adam, who was really into, like, doing movies, making movies. Oh, and so yeah. We would do some school projects where we would make movies. And we did one on, like, the American Revolution. And we're sitting in a canoe, like, George Washington crossing the Delaware. But then it was all Monty Python style where they would, like, zoom out the camera. And it's tied to the back of a truck. And we were rowing the wrong way. And then the truck pulls us out. And, of course, at one point, we had a take where everybody accidentally flipped over the thing. And it was the middle of winter. And so half the BB guns are still lost in the bottom of this little cow pond. So just... dumb, like,
yeah,
but it was so fun. It was so fun. You know, I'm trying to think of what else, but that was good. It was good. I had a good
fun
high school
adventures.
Time.
So you spent part of your ninth grade in
the rest like of your the first, I guess we moved like right around my birthday. So it was, I spent most of ninth grade in California, but then the end of it in Missouri. So. It was good. And then of course, part of the reason we were going out there was my dad wanted to build a golf course. And so he'd bought some property there. And so like summers and even some during the school year, we were working on the golf course and I'm, you know, 15 years old running backhoes and
heavy equipment. Pretty cool.
Dump trucks and all this stuff and getting the full experience. So it was fun. It was good.
Yeah. So I was in college at that time or had just started, I finished Cal Baptist with my dad when mom and John had moved. So I would go back, you know, we'd go back in the summers and I would help with a golf course. And even though I was older, like John was like right-hand man, like he knew the ins and outs and he knew all the equipment and he knew. And I imagine that didn't sit well with me because we talked about the whole bossy status. So
yeah.
I'm kind of vaguely remembering me definitely on more than one occasion, like trying to come in and be bossy or something and so foolish now looking back where
yeah I don't remember that so much yeah. So it probably wasn't too bad you were maturing by then but
yeah
but I'm sure coming in and like you know we were a small family anyway so it's like it's not like you're one of six kids and when you come back it's like oh you're joining the chaos like you know, you come back and you're part of the main thing that's happening there's only one thing going on
yeah
but I remember yeah I mean I'm sure there was because like you know, you come in and you're older and you're an adult and here's this teenage kid who's like the foreman, you know, and you're like, I don't want to take orders from him, which I don't think I gave you any orders or anything, but I mean, it would have been like, you probably would have had to defer to me on some stuff, but yeah, it was good. I mean, I know we were building greens and stuff and we were raking a lot of gravel and stuff like that. And I probably would like say, oh yeah, we're going to do it like this. Yeah. So, I don't know. Maybe that, maybe that rubbed you the wrong way, but I remember it being a pretty good time.
Yeah.
In general.
Yeah.
It was, and what was crazy is like, so my dad ended up building this regulation 9-hole golf course in Missouri. And, you know, we helped, but it was definitely like his project. It was his, you know, dream to do this. And, but I mean, he was super cheap, which is why he had enough money to do this in the first place. But like we would have like our family would all come out at times when we were doing big projects. And so we'd have uncles and cousins and stuff out there laying, you know, 20-foot sections of like hundreds and hundreds of feet of irrigation line. You know, and we're just all out there, this big free crew, basically, you know,
family affair.
But it was cool, 'cause then when it was done, they could come out and play golf and stuff like that. So, but it was pretty cool to see how that all, you know, was able to happen. And
what was one of the hardest parts for you about building that golf course? Is it?
I don't know. It was a lot of work, but it was my job too. I mean, he paid me, I mean, minimum wage, but he paid me, you know, so it was my job. You know, there was definitely hard work. There was manual labor, you know, digging ditches, you know, like you dig a ditch with a trench, but then you have to go through and like clean it out and make sure, I mean, it was an old beat up trencher and stuff. So there was parts where it wouldn't have gotten quite as deep as it needed to or something like that. I don't know. I mean, it was hard work, but, it was overall pretty enjoyable, I guess. I think it was kind of hard working with my dad sometimes, 'cause you know, he could get very frustrated sometimes about stuff. And, you know, it's like working with someone it's their company, you know, this is his dream. And so he's, you know, got a lot of emotions invested into it. Mm-hmm. So if things weren't going well, or if, you know, I remember one time I was, you know, I'm a kid and I'm probably 16 at this point, and I'm driving the backhoe, you know, and I'm tearing across the field and it's boom, boom, bouncing. Yeah. And to him, he sees his backhoe. They just had to pay hundreds and hundreds of dollars to have the frame rewelded on it. Yeah. And so he got really angry with me about that. So there was times like that weren't so fun, but still, and then at the same time, you know, I'm out there, a 16-year-old kid getting to do this stuff. Yeah. So, but yeah, so there was definitely some grinds, but
I could see that. I mean, it's hard as a teenager to, I mean, even my son, who's getting older, but, you know, for him to kind of put together how much things cost or the importance of doing certain things, because they just do stuff, like, you know, just trying to get him to be a little bit more focused on, you know, the little details and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like you get them out, I pressure wash this right here, and then you go back and you're like, oh, you missed all this stuff. And they never see that they miss it. And I remember when I was a kid, because I'd gotten chewed out before by my grandpa for... You mow the grass and you think you've done really well until you go back and he takes you down there and says, look at all those strips you missed, because you're just going.
Oh, yeah.
So, yes, it's sometimes those teenage kids just don't put the importance of, oh, it's done. It's pressure washed. Yeah. Look at all those little brown strips there that you haven't done and finished up with. So then they're mad because they got to do it over.
Yeah.
So they get to hear the usual, if you'd done it right the first time. Yeah.
Somebody's going to crack that code one day and teenagers are going to be a joy.
I know, it is funny just being a teacher, and I just look and I'm like, oh my gosh, like, this is why we can't have nice things.
What circuit is missing in their brain?
That's the reason why they don't let you do certain things at this age.
Yep.
So
yeah, and crazy. Tricky, because I mean, you are kind of partway between a young kid and an adult, you know. I mean, you've got a couple more years, 18 years old, where you literally are making like huge decisions. And you know, so you just, a lot of times there's some resentment, like, why are you talking to me? Like, I know what I'm doing. You know, like, I know I struggle with that. Like, you know, just that pride of, if you had to correct me or tell me something to change, it meant there was something wrong with me. Mm-hmm, or, mm-hmm. you know, I took offense to it. Like, I'm not a quality person. And definitely took some maturity and growing up for me to realize, hey, that's okay. Like, constructive criticism. And it's not always handed out in the right way, but
yeah,
sometimes it can come across a little harsh. I definitely have learned a lot about that in the past few years, but so yeah, so working on the golf course. But then, so when you graduated high school, you know, what were you thinking was next for you, like in your life? I know college is like, you know, a lot of people think that you have to go to college next, but other people are like, no, you know, you could just start a job. Or what were you thinking like leading up to senior year?
I mean, I wasn't thinking much about, mm-hmm. about that. So I was just enjoying, yeah. you know, what I was doing. I think in the back of my head, I probably knew I was going to go to school. You know, I know I had thoughts about like becoming a doctor, mm-hmm. and I had a girlfriend at the time, and I remember she used to get bad headaches, and I was like, oh, I'm going to figure that out and mm-hmm. cure that or whatever. I definitely had like these delusions of grandeur in my head about how amazing I was going to be, and how big a deal I was going to be and all that stuff. And I was pretty smart. I mean,
I was book smart. I was going to interject that, yeah.
I mean, I scored really high on like our ACT. We didn't take SATs for some reason. I don't know if that's a small town thing or what. But I scored like really, really high on my ACT, and, you know, really could have done academically probably anything I wanted to. But, I know once I had different thoughts. Ever since I was a little kid, when, in fact, this is kind of cool tying in now, but you know, I wanted to be a pilot. I wanted to fly. And I remember thinking somebody told me like I had to get like perfect grades to be a pilot in the military. I don't know where that came from. They were misinformed. but yeah, I wanted to be a pilot really badly. I was playing flight simulator when I was 7 years old. We had a demo version of like one of the first. I've looked it up on YouTube. If you look up like the 1988 version of Microsoft Flight Simulator, what they do in that little thing, that's all I did. I had this demo version, and I could take off and land at one airport with two planes, and I probably played that thing for 1,000 hours, taking off and landing, and then just flying forever, because I didn't know what, you know, what it meant to like try to actually find an airport or fly headings or anything. I just loved the flying part of it. So I definitely wanted to be a pilot, and kind of had the chance to do that. There was a flight school that came to our school recruiting, but wasn't able to do that. My parents kind of said no, and it was something they had to sign off on probably because they were going to be financially responsible for it. Mm. So they said no to that, and that kind of hurt. But you know, so I just kind of, I guess, continue with the general path you might think of, which is, you know, go to college. But I didn't really have anything I was passionate about, mm-hmm. and so it was kind of that why am I even going? So I wouldn't show up for classes, and ended up moving out because I wanted my freedom. And mm-hmm. You know, after, you know, kind of flunking out my classes because I wouldn't show up, I was working at a jewelry store, polishing jewelry, and then just got this wild hair through a couple people I knew about joining the Marines. Hmm. And so I went to the recruiter and signed up.
So you went to the recruiter. This wasn't
them
coming to a school or anything like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just walked in, and thankfully I had a friend who was actually already in the Marines who kind of helped me with it. Otherwise I would have been an NBC guy. With no offense.
Little
that,
dig there.
Because they were definitely pushing that. Like, oh, be an NBC in a nuclear, biological, chemical, you know, blah, blah, blah. You'd really
sounds
love that.
Fancy.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, great. And this guy's like, oh, you don't want to do that.
Yeah. You're going to run a gas chamber. So, you're going to find out in boot camp why you don't want to do that. And then you realize you get to run the chambers, so you no longer have to go in them as much.
That could have been fun. That could have been fun.
The one part.
Besides that, yeah.
But yeah, so I ended up getting to, I signed up for air crew. And
I like your gig.
Yeah, and got to be a loadmaster on C-130s, which was probably the best job you can get in the Marine Corps if you're just talking about.
I think so. I mean, it definitely, with all the time I had to spend doing the stuff I did, plus being in Fox, you know, fighting holes and mm-hmm. just being cold and just being out running maneuvers and everything else. It was a lot cooler to know that you're on one of those aircraft. I was
on an airplane flying to Europe.
Your job is jump on an airplane, sleep in nice barracks. I don't know if you ever had one. Did you ever have to use the little lean-to thing that we had to practice in boot camp after boot camp?
We never did either. Not really. So like,
I was just going to
because like your field training was going out in those things. My field training was flying across the Atlantic.
Yeah.
So okay, we're going definitely lucked out, and we'll have another conversation about this later.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was great. That I lucked out because air crew, you could be anything. You could be, you know, a gunner on a, well, maybe, I think a gunner anyway, or you could be like a mechanic on helicopters sleeping on a ship. Mm-hmm. But I lucked out and got loadmaster on C-130s. So
it was a very important job, though. I mean, people don't know exactly what loadmaster means on a C-130 or any cargo carrying aircraft.
Yeah.
But it's a pretty important job because it's not just getting on there and making sure things are strapped down. You were responsible for
weights. We would do airdrops and yeah, I mean, my job was to make sure the plane was balanced so that when we took off, we could actually continue to climb and not like nose over into the ground or vice versa.
I mean, that's a lot of responsibility because the pilot's sitting up front expecting to fly and expecting you to have the professional knowledge to make sure that all of you guys get off the ground safely. So you've got to do your job and he's got to have trust in that.
It really is. Trust. I mean, it's a lot of Marines, especially first term enlisted Marines, they're basically responsible for very little.
Yeah. I can understand that.
But yeah, as
19, 20 years old,
as a loadmaster, I mean, you're going out and you're one of two enlisted guys with a crew of five or six and you're a lot of times the only loadmaster, and yeah, you're almost your own boss in a way. Mm-hmm. And you're right. I mean, the pilot knows, has a general knowledge of everything, but that pilot isn't going to be able to walk back there and be like, I don't think we're in balance. It looks like there's too much back there.
Yeah, there's too much in the rear
or whatever. And so, it really was, I guess, a lot of responsibility. And you know, to get that, you had to go through like a board review. They had a team of guys that came out and interviewed all the guys in aircrew school and handpicked the ones that they felt like would be good for it. So I was very fortunate.
I can imagine not only you had to be smart, but you needed to be.
You had to have a certain level of maturity.
Yeah, maturity to you. Yeah. They couldn't just have an 18-year-old smart kid go back there who's not going to pay attention to a strap.
Right.
Things shift on takeoff
and
crash the plane.
Yep. So yeah, it was great. So I really enjoyed that. Got to do a lot of, you know, traveling and seeing different parts of the world. And
coolest flights you made in it? I mean, you went overseas all the time.
Yeah. So some of the coolest things, I'd say one of them that I remember was just being in Iceland during, mm-hmm. I guess, the summertime. And I remember walking home because we had this like this rule where you couldn't go out and drink within 12 hours of your showtime for the next day.
Right.
And so most of the time you would land and you would have maybe 14 hours before your showtime the next day. So you could go out and you could have a couple of drinks with guys or go get dinner and have a beer or something like that. But then every once in a while you'd have a down day and it was like
party,
you know, go out, you could be back whenever you want.
No holds
I'm not barred. Even sure sometimes how I got back to the base. I hope my kids don't hear this. Just kidding. So there was one time where we were in Iceland and, anyway, I just remember like walking back, it was like 2 a.m. and I could still see, it was like kind of like a dusk light, which was really crazy, you know, but being that far north in Iceland and the time and everything, that was a cool experience. Got to go to Italy, you know, and see Mount Etna while it was kind of, I guess, erupting technically. Yeah. Like you could see the glow at the top of the mountain. And then the next morning it was like ash in some of the pad eyes, the places where you can tie down the planes. There was like fresh ash that's in there. Crazy. So I scooped some up into a water bottle. I don't know what happened to that water bottle, but I had mostly dirt and some ash in it from Mount Etna. And then I got to hang out in London for a day or so once. Got to see Stonehenge and stuff like that. So those were all cool experiences getting to go. And then, you know, I spent 6.5 months in Iraq during the war out there. And so that was also a really crazy experience. Very rewarding, I guess. One of the things that we would do is we would carry Marines that were killed in a battle. We would carry them from Iraq to Kuwait in their transition home, and we would fly a flag. And there was a certain way we would do it, depending on how many there were. We would fly a flag right in front of the forward caskets. Mm-hmm. And so everybody, every loadmaster had their flag, that they would always keep with them. Cause you could get called to do it in the middle of a flight. And so, that was one of the probably more honoring and, you know, significant parts of that experience. And so I still have that flag at home, that I would use to put cool. up and, you know, obviously extremely sad, but, you know, one of the maybe more significant things I did there, I guess. Cause that's a big deal.
Were you guys during your time, did you get assigned to an aircraft and you had the same crew all the way through?
Or no, you would shift up. You would shift a lot. And I think I remember them talking about whether that was a better plan was to have crews like that. But I think the consensus was that when you fly with different people, it keeps you sharper and, you know, you learn more from each other and you don't get complacent. So, yeah. So you would be on different aircraft. You'd be on different with different crews. I mean, there's probably, you know, a mix of like, I don't know. There was several crews worth of people there between pilots and loadmasters and stuff. I don't remember how many exactly, or if I'm even supposed to say, right. But yeah, so you would fly with different people. And I'm sure scheduling it was crazy, you know, trying to make sure everybody had enough crew rest, but still taking care of all the missions that had to be done. But we would fly almost every day, for like, I don't know, sometimes 18 hours, just depends.
Were you in Cherry Point or were you out?
Yeah, I was out of Cherry Point at that point.
So were you at Cherry Point for your duration?
I was at Cherry Point. Yeah, I didn't have to go to any other permanent duty station. I was in for 5 years. By the time I was done with training, I probably had, I don't know, a little over 3 years, like 3.5, almost 4 years left. Mm-hmm. So I got to spend it all at Cherry Point. So,
okay.
Yeah.
I was at Cherry Point also.
Yeah.
For pretty much my duration, except for school.
Mm-hmm.
And going to Desert Storm kicked my overseas control date back. So even though that last year you normally would spend it overseas in Japan.
Oh, yeah.
I got back in with not enough time left for the prepping to go and that mm-hmm. year that you had to go. And then you had a little bit of time when you had to come back here. So you had to have that little space in mind that Desert Storm carried me across that. So Cherry Point during that time, except when we went overseas. Yep. So, yeah, Cherry Point was a small town.
Mm-hmm.
Havelock.
Yep. Havelock, New Bern.
Atlantic Beach.
Yep. Good times.
Yeah.
Good times.
It's changed a lot since I was there. And I'm sure it's changed it's a lot. It's
changed a lot now, too.
Yeah.
There's probably still like 16 used car dealerships outside of the base, but
Taco Bell.
Yeah.
Check cashing place. Tattoo parlor.
Hooters.
And yeah. Hooters.
There's Hooters now. All that typical stuff.
And a quote unquote dancing club.
Yes. Yeah. Right out the back gate.
Yeah. Right out the back gate. Yep.
We won't go into that.
Yeah.
So remind me a couple of things. Like I know you started to mention it, but you know, being part of the ground crew, you didn't just fly. Like you guys, yes, would carry things back and forth, but did you like the rapid ground RGR?
Yeah.
I don't know how much you could talk about.
We didn't do much of that.
Okay.
But I did get to do one of those where I led it. That was something where, you know, theoretically you could set up basically a fueling station. Cause one of the things about C-130s is they're also refueling aircraft. They can mm-hmm. put basically a huge tank in the cargo area instead of putting cargo in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so they put this huge, like 35,000 pound fuel tank in the cargo area of the plane. And that basically gives them all this fuel that they can give, to other aircraft. And so we could do in-flight refueling, which is really cool. If you've never seen that, you can look it up. It's different from KC-135s. So look up C-130 aero refueling because we do it in a much weirder way. We have like these hoses come out magically from the wings and the other pilots have to like aim and plug into them.
Yeah.
So it's not a boom operator. And so I would just observe, basically. I didn't have much of an active role in that. But again, you know, the pilot, you know, was trusting me back there to let him know what was going on. And, you know, he's just flying the plane and making sure we're, you know, we're staying in the pattern and the other guys are doing their thing, trying to get connected. And, you know, we had our own little kind of languages, like, you know, especially during training some new guys, which I can't imagine I would never be able to do it, I'm sure. But like, you know, they kind of go forward trying to plug and then it would miss and be like a swing and a miss, you know, like, not making fun of them or anything, but, you know, you could definitely tell the guys that have been doing it a lot, they were a lot more accurate, but yeah, so, we would also theoretically, you could go out, you know, if you're at war somewhere, and strategically you're trying to maybe gain some ground. You've got aircraft that are a lot shorter range. You could set up a station on the ground. We roll out like hundreds of feet of hoses and set up these stations where we would basically refuel them on the ground. They could fly in, and we would direct them in and hook them up, and they would take fuel, and then they would fly off. So that was a cool one that we would get to do. And I got to lead it one time, which meant I'm sitting there directing aircraft in, and like these CH-53s coming in, which are huge helicopters. And I'm like trying to taxi, man. One of the things about an RGR site, they say you never, ever walk backwards in an RGR site because you never know if there's a rotor right behind you or something like that. So I'm like directing the CH-53 in, which is got these huge rotors, and it's coming in to land, and I'm literally about to get blown over. So I had to take a couple of steps backwards, and I was like, I'm not supposed to do this, but it's going to literally blow this 200-pound man off the ground. So it was pretty crazy, the force that those things generate.
So did you, as being part of the air crew, I'm sure you had to attend SEER training, search
yes.
and evade. That's always an interest. It's like
survive, naked and afraid, evade, except resist, the escape.
Yeah. It's yep. like naked and afraid, except with uniform on, and people are trying to catch you while yes. you're out there. So
yes.
tell us a little bit about, because I'm sure there's always interesting stories and stuff that you had to eat and just the whole air crew kind of
requirement. There are. I mean, it's definitely, so I don't want to be cliche, but it is. There's some classified stuff. I'm not sure, how much of it is.
Right.
But it was the coolest school I ever went to. Hmm. So essentially you're learning, I would say you could call it like POW training, except it's also about like, it simulates if you were to get, you know, shot down or crash somehow behind enemy lines, what to do to A, try to get rescued before you get found, and then what to do if you do get found. So staying alive, procedures to try to get rescued, tactics to try to avoid being found, teach you how to use the tools they give you to try to communicate with local people that may potentially be willing to help you. I mean, obviously if you're at war, you know, hopefully you're in a place where they're wanting you there and not, right. you know, but anyway, so if you do happen to find someone, you've got a way to kind of communicate with them to try to help you out. So those kinds of things, you know, the survival training was really great. I learned how to, you know, trap animals or snare animals and stuff like that, and how to survive. I actually went in early December up in Maine. And so I also got my cold weather extreme survival training certificate because we were sleeping outside. It was 4 degrees, yeah. you know, and we're, you know, sleeping in it's a big fat sleeping bag, but it's still 4 degrees outside. And so, yeah, so that stuff was really incredible, and just learning about how to navigate, you know, and I made probably every dumb mistake you can make that they warn you not to make. And then
that's once why you do the training,
you do eventually, even, you know, we were there, some of the guys that are there. So you're there with a mixture of people, not just Marines even, but there's some Navy people there. And there was a recon guy there. And of course he crushed it, you know, he did everything right. He didn't get captured, but you know, you have to surrender yourself at a certain point. But if you make it to the safe house, you get like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, apparently. Cause you definitely don't get a lot to eat once you get out in the field. But I made all the dumb mistakes, and we got captured and, taken, and, you know, we're at the camp, and you know, they're asking you questions that you're not supposed to be answering, but I'm sticking my hand up in anyway. Like they're asking me, all right, who has this, blah, 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 blah. And you know, who's air crew. And I'm sticking my hand up because I'm obedient and I've been trained to answer questions, and somebody beside me like trying to nudge me. And I think they're just jostling. And so at the end of it, I'm like sticking my head in my face, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I did that. So I made all the dumb mistakes, but I also learned a ton. So, and honestly, some of those skills I use at home on my kids, like when they ask me a question and I don't want to answer it. I mean, it's just natural. I just use those skills. I use those evasion skills and be like, hey, look at the weather. What's going on? Hey, what'd you do with your face? Did you brush your teeth? It's time for bed. Bye. like getting people to like talking without them realizing you never answered their question kind of thing. So it was a very cool school. I really enjoyed it. But yeah, it was intense.
Well, I don't know if you learned it in that training, or this is just, like I said, I've obviously known you a while, but you have the ability to see something or see a need, and you just either know how to figure it out and make it, or you will figure out how to find it and make it. But We hiked a little of the AT with you, and literally the one full day that we hiked rained. Like,
yes.
How many hours? Like straight, at least we 8 hours. We hiked
7 miles. Yeah. 7 miles in the rain uphill like, the entire time.
Yeah, literally. The uphill stuff all wasn't that bad. It's just like your whole time you're looking down.
Right.
Uh-huh. And you get to that one shelter.
Right.
And everybody's packing the shelter. And so we sit on the backside trying to eat our little peanut butter and banana sandwich. Yeah. And then we're at it again. And that was a fun, little weekend, but it was definitely a lot of rain.
It was a lot of rain. I mean, everything was literally soaked. And yes. Praise the Lord, it finally stopped raining about right when we got to camp. Right when we got to camp.
Yep. It was perfect.
But you're so wet. It's like, you know, you feel you're never going to be dry again. And this man right here
built a
scrunched down next to all the wood, and you put together a significant fire. And mm-hmm. You were just patient with it. And you knew exactly what to do.
Some of that came from Seer School, I'll be honest.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, learning how to build a fire.
Yeah.
But then some of it just came from other people I know. And,
sure.
And some of it even came from Mad About You. You remember that show?
I do.
It's really funny.
Really?
But in that show, there was an episode where they were like at some, I don't know, they were at some resort or whatever, some cabin somewhere.
Yeah.
And he was talking about building a log cabin versus building a teepee. And I actually do it where I build both. I build a little teepee and then I build a log cabin around it. And then eventually I start building a teepee on top of the log cabin.
Oh,
and
goodness.
So
I love Seer
School, is great, but I really learned how to build fires from a sitcom when I was a kid.
That fire came in real handy because were wet. I had wet weather gear on and it was still going.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a,
there's
like
only so much rain a raincoat can withstand.
Yeah. It's like rain was going underneath it. Rain was coming sideways. Like a Forrest Gump story. So I'm standing there.
Rain coming up from underneath.
Yep.
It really was.
Nothing I had was dry. I had helmet. We got into this old camp and I'm walking around in my underwear. And I'm like, they just look like shorts anyway because this is the only thing that was dry and they were still wet. Mm-hmm. So I'm standing there drying off and there's camp and everybody else is staying in their tent. And it was just
with a blanket wrapped around
it. Listen, I'm just in my underwear. This is all I can do until my clothes dried out the next day. It was a fun trip, though.
It was. So,
We'll have to do it again. I was trying to figure out how I was talking to him yesterday about, it's been at least a year.
It's been 2 years.
I think 2 years. Yeah. That was crazy.
We had that coyote or something right outside of our tent. So we're setting up this tent the first night. Deborah and I are hiking in to meet him. So it's dark when we get there. He's already been on the trail for the night, and he's got this really cool spot that we're meeting him at. And we get there, and you and I are setting up our tent. Actually, he's helping us set up that tent that we borrowed. Everywhere as we go, you bring snacks. You're the snack lady. So we have these snacks. Basically, if I remember right, it was
pineapple. I think.
Pineapple. So I had this bag of pineapple.
Or bag.
And I set it down on the ground while he and I are putting the tent up. So the pineapple's been on the ground right outside the tent of where our tent's set up. So that night, we're sleeping in the tent. And I wake up in the middle of the night because I'm very light sleeper unless I have a sound machine on. So there's no sound machine and I can hear something lapping at the ground right outside my head. It's like a little coyote. Well, no, probably a little coyote. It's either that or a fox, but it was definitely a dog sized animal right outside of our tent. And we're way up on top of the mountain. So it's not like a dog. And
somebody's like the neighbor's dog.
Yeah. Not the neighbor's dog. Yeah. It's a wild animal. And it's like, but 1 foot away from my head. So it's like kind of cool. I'm laying there in the middle of the night and I'm thinking, this thing probably smells me, but I'm not really a threat. And it's eating this pineapple. I was trying to figure out what exactly it was doing. And then I remembered about the pineapple being out there. And I listened for a little bit and then I heard it kind of walk off into the woods and stuff. And then, so it was kind of neat to hear it just right on the upper side of my head outside the tent. So there was only that little thin membrane
separating you from a wild animal.
Yeah, so it's pretty cool. I wasn't scared or anything. I was just like listening to it. So
fascinated.
This is pretty neat. It's this close to me.
Being in nature. So speaking of the AT, I know you've hiked a bit of it. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that. Yeah, that start. And
so a friend of mine named Chris, when I was living in Florida, we worked at the same church and he wanted to go start hiking the Appalachian Trail. And he wanted someone to go with him. So I was single still and told him I would go. And so we hiked 3 days and started at the approach trail in Georgia and hiked up to Blood Mountain and then down to this place called Neal's Gap, which was a great stopping point. And I loved it and I loved the area. That's actually why we live here now. When we were moving from South Florida, I kind of circled this area on the map where we were and said, I want to live here. And part of that was Knoxville. I didn't realize it. But then also in that circle, believe it or not, was Franklin. Huh. And so this is, I mean, I love this area. And so when we moved here, I didn't hike anymore, like probably 7 or 8 more years since then. I didn't hike anymore, but I wanted to be in that area because I wanted to do more hiking. Mm-hmm. And then when we moved here, I started hiking some more of it and ended up picking up where I left off, just doing a few days at a time. And I've done 100, 130 or 40 miles of it now.
Yeah.
Just I'll keep going, doing little 3 or 4 day cool. trips. Yeah, it's awesome. But
I'm really intrigued sometimes by the stuff that you do up there, because and it's the stuff that hikers that stay up there overnight, long periods of time, have to do.
Oh yeah, what I do is nothing.
I really want you to teach me, because where you hang the bag up in the tree so it's bear proof.
Oh, I don't do that anymore.
Oh, you don't? You got a different thing?
Yeah, I use a bear canister.
Okay.
If you're hiking, use a bear canister. It's so much better.
There you go.
Because I was thinking to myself, when we go out camping, we need to, because I put it inside the vehicle. I don't keep any food outside. Yeah. We put it inside the Jeep. But I'm thinking a bear can still bust the window, because when they're hungry, they're hungry.
Yeah.
But a bear, like a canister, may be the route to go.
Yeah. I mean, people have come up with different methods. I don't remember the acronym for it, but there's like a PTN or whatever kind of method of hanging it up, because bears are smart. People would hang their bags and bears would figure out, oh, if I just cut this wire or cut this string, then the bag falls down and I've got dinner. Huh. And so they figure out this other method where you like tie your thing up and run it through a loop so that the bear grabs and if it pulls on the string, it just raises the bag higher. Mm. But it is a super pain. And I think bears may have even started to figure that out. But most, there's a lot of national parks that won't let you camp unless you have a bear canister. And bear canisters are pretty foolproof. And I've decided that if bears figure out how to get into those, I'm done camping.
Are they smell proof or something?
They're pretty odor proof, but also, and what I like about bear canisters is that they literally can't get in them. So it's kind of going to, like, hopefully if people use them more and more and more, it'll sort of detrain the bears from being, you know, from expecting to be able to eat hiker food and stuff like that. So kind of reverse maybe some of the trend of bears being attracted to the hiker places because they know they can get food instead.
They'll say,
I can't get food anymore because everybody's now using bear canisters, and they'll kind of go back to their natural.
So that's the thing about it. When we go camping, it's hard to find a bear canister big enough to hold the food that we have. I'm not sure how big they get, but because we usually have
cooler. Oh, having to carry that?
Yeah, because, I mean, it would be easy to carry because we have a vehicle, but how big one of those would have to be to put the food we have in it when we're...
Oh, gotcha.
Because we're cooking. He's hiking, so he's got bags.
I was going to say, you have to stop bringing, like, casseroles and stuff and start bringing actual hiker food.
Yeah, yeah.
Which hiker food...
I can't fit my turkey leg in here.
And hiker food is actually quite fascinating. It's amazing. Like, I think it's one of the coolest things.
I just keep remembering all these little stories. Because I'm not a foodie. I don't have that... Fine, but it was still really good that morning that he mixed the water into the little baggie, and we're down there by the creek side, and he heats it up with his little heating stove, and I'm sitting there eating this thing. I'm like, this is really good.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was pretty cool. I mean, the little bags of food that turn out to be a really good meal. That's probably a little bit more of expense than what we'd want to do each time we go camping, but that's not a bad idea because those are pretty good meals.
They're not that expensive either.
Say you compare
they're usually less than $10 each, and they're a full meal. So.
Yeah.
And with the calories you need, because if you're out there hiking, you don't want empty calories. You want, you know, you want pretty concentrated food. So I don't know, something to think. See, now I'm like excited to go
getting the bug.
Back.
Springtime. Yeah. Time to go hiking
with you over a weekend or something.
We might have to make another section of it, a weekend with him.
Yeah. Whereabout are you on your trek?
I am getting ready to head north from the Knock.
Okay. That doesn't mean anything to me, but
Outdoor Center.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
So we went around there that time when they were doing all the whitewater rafting.
Well, yeah.
There's the cool restaurant there I want to eat with you.
Student taught up there, so yes, I passed it. I assume that's the same one.
Maybe we can find someone to stay with.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be a little tricky about like you getting there and then wherever your stopping point is and getting a ride home. You know, because the further you get from home, you're starting further from home and you're ending further from home.
Right.
You know, so arranging all the rides and stuff like that. So. Yeah, a little bit, but you get the hang of it. Nice. Very cool. So let's see. So Marine Days, you decide. Oh, tell me about the rubber chicken. if I caught him off guard on that one.
A guy I knew, my first real teenager job was at McDonald's. And there was a guy that worked there named Jeffrey Slavens. And he used to, I don't know, he was a weird guy. And he would just go like, eat chicken. Like, I don't know where that came from. He probably had other things he said, but I kind of stole that from him a little bit and brought it with me to my school because this was in Lebanon, which was the big town.
The big city.
The big town. And I went to Conway High School, which is the little town.
The country high school.
So I would like start saying stuff like that at like basketball games and just all kinds of stuff. And it expanded from there to all kinds of weird stuff. So at some point, I guess it was when I was a senior and I was playing baseball and like part of my senior gift was a rubber chicken and it was awesome. I loved it. Oh no, I don't remember. Gosh, there's been so much.
Yeah.
Anyway, I got this rubber chicken. And that became like my mascot. In fact, when I was flying in C-130s, sometimes I would go back. We had this like, it's called the bomb rack. But it was right at the back of the plane where you would use it for rigging airdrops sometimes. And originally it was made for like, you know, rigging up a bomb to be taken out of the back of the C-130. So that's why it was called the bomb rack. But I would clip the chicken in it and it would just kind of hang there during the flight. I've got a couple pictures of that. But I would take the rubber chicken with me everywhere I went. And so then at some point, Gmail came out. And so I made my email address rubber chicken. Of course, someone already had rubber chicken. So I had to spell it without the E in rubber. So it's RUBBR. So don't email me. That's my spam account now anyway. But yeah, so now anytime I go to like Lowe's or something and it says email receipt and people kind of grin, I'm like, I know I'm an adult, but It's been my email address for like 20 years now, so I'm not changing it. But and whoever out there has rubber chicken for real, I've tried emailing you, I want it. But anyway,
that email.
If you get a response from this in our email account, that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. teamlibra@gmail.com. Yes. Let us know about the rubber chicken.
You're probably not using it anymore.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's an AOL Let me account. Have
it. Oh. Release Yahoo. It.
Anyway. So, yeah, so that's where that came from.
Yeah.
So, I actually have a tattoo of a rubber chicken that I got while I was in the Marines. Yeah. And what was funny is, like, we're at this tattoo place, and these guys are, like, their necks are full of ink. Like, they've got ink everywhere. And these guys are coming over to look like, that's actually really cool, man.
Your rubber chicken.
This rubber chicken. And the guy did a great job on it. Like,
yeah.
The legs had, like, definition, like, muscle definition and stuff. I was like, that is a really good rubber chicken. Yeah. So
that chicken didn't skip leg day.
Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah. So
no chicken legs for him.
Yeah. So
that's so cool. Well, part of the reason I just think it's a fun story and it just kind of stuck, you know, like, so still, there's still some connotation there. And, but anyway, so when it came to the end of that 5 years for you in the Marines, you had a decision to make.
I did.
To re-up or, you know, to go ahead and get out. So, tell us a little bit about that. And
well, so
just the process as well.
And it's funny because we haven't talked a lot about like God or anything, but you know, we were raised in church, mm-hmm. you know, and always knowing who God was and stuff. But, and so even when I was in the Marines and I was being stupid and, you know, drinking too much and stuff like that, I always still tried to be a Christian. Like I would find a church and I would go to it and stuff like that. And mm-hmm. So it was kind of, you know, kind of a weird thing. I think a lot of people have a similar story when they grew up as a Christian and, you know, you kind of have to figure it out at some point on your own, like what it really means for you and how right. God's really talking to you. But regardless of my maturity level as a Christian, when it came time to re-enlist, like I really enjoyed what I was doing. Mm-hmm. And when it came time to re-enlist, I just knew that if I re-enlisted, it's like God was telling me, I wouldn't accomplish what he wanted from me. I wouldn't accomplish what he had for me.
Wow.
If I re-enlisted. And it came down to when I had that paper in front of me to sign one of two lines where I really made the decision. And I had, again, I had these big thoughts about what that meant. I was going to be this biblical archaeology historian, like a Christian Indiana Jones or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Which cool. sounds cool. Sounds yeah, really sure. cool.
Really cool.
You know, and I've always wanted to dig at more of the truth, which really has a lot less to do with finding archaeological stuff than it does to do with your own heart mm-hmm. and stuff. So. But anyway, so that's kind of where that came from. So I thought, okay, I'll go to South Florida where my sister lives and hang out with hot chicks and go to college and be a cool Christian, you know, whatever. And so that's kind of what led to that. And then I did go to South Florida and still didn't have the drive to do college. So I flunked out of that college, which is hilarious because like Julie will tell you, like I'm very smart. I'm very smart, but I can also be really dumb. And so like, I just wouldn't do my homework. Same as the story when I was 19
years ago.
just wouldn't sit down and do my homework. I just wanted to do other stuff. And so,
yeah.
But anyway, that took me in other directions, got me started in ministry, and which ultimately led to us moving out here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's pretty cool. Awesome. Yeah.
Beneficial to me.
Yeah, you're welcome.
It is kind of crazy too, because, you know, so when you moved, to Florida, you know, I was there and, you know, Julie and I have been friends because we had a mutual friend. So she and I were friends. And so then the three of us hung out, you mm-hmm. know, just as friends. And it is kind of funny because I did know her first. You know, we already knew each other pretty well. She and I did. And so one time the three of us are hanging out in our condo mm-hmm. where we lived. And I think you lived there at the time. Weren't just visiting. And, we're all watching a movie. It's a Saturday night. You know, we went to the same church, I believe. And so I turn around, I look at Julie and I said, did you bring clothes? And she looks at me and says, I didn't bring my pills. I was like, oh, okay. And then John's
and so I'm sitting there, I'm like, and they just go back to watching the movie.
Right. They were
and
done
I'm like,
with our conversation.
Wait, what just happened? That was not a conversation. How does, did you bring clothes? I forgot my pills equal any kind of understanding between the two of you.
I just swallowed that. I'm going to die while you guys finish.
Did you bring clothes? I forgot my pills. Oh.
Yeah.
Guys, women are weird.
Yes.
Even that was kind of far-fetched, even for typical women weirdness. Well, what was funny is that Julie had been in a car accident, and so she was having like really a hard time with herniated disc and stuff. So she had these muscle relaxers, I think it was. So I essentially was asking if she brought clothes so she could stay the night. We'd just go to church the next day, and she was letting me know she couldn't stay the night because she didn't bring her pills to help her sleep and not have pain. So anyway, it was just kind of funny, but yeah. So we were able to, you know, be good friends, and you know, and then obviously one thing led to another for you guys. And
yep, I asked her out, and she said no.
And so clearly, that's a love story in the making.
Yep. And so, so then I just
went about
my business, I guess. And God was doing a lot of stuff in my life at the time, maturing me from that. I was still a single Marine at heart, trying to live a single lifestyle and, you know, that kind of thing. And so over the course of the next 8 or 9 months, almost a year, he did a lot, in my life. Mm-hmm. And I kind of really got it and really allowed him to have control of who I was and mm-hmm. what I did. And I think she saw that change. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what he was waiting for. So then almost a year later, she ended up asking me out. And
through
so,
email.
I always joke about, you know, if you really like a girl, just ask and wait a year.
Yeah.
Great dating advice, guys.
Yeah. You got to show them no interest. Like, it's not even paying attention to them. And then that's what brings them.
That's what, yeah.
Yeah.
No.
So. Yeah, it's kind of funny. Well, and you mentioned, and one thing I really appreciate about you, and you challenge me, you know, we did grow up in a Christian home, and a lot of that does come with just kind of believing things because that's what you've heard your whole life. Mm-hmm. You know, because you have to cultivate your own personal relationship with God if it's going to be real. Like you're not grandfathered in,
right?
And until you personally, you know, start reading and spending time with Him on your own. And so I always appreciate that you have been someone to say, okay, why do I believe this? Mm-hmm. Like, is this something that God really says or that is really true about God? Or is this something that I've just been told my whole life? And you kind of like trace it back, you know, to like, where did this really come from? And so you and I have had great conversations many, many, many times on just a lot of different things. And I really like talking to you because, you know, I feel like you are a truth seeker, mm-hmm. you know, like you want to know God Himself.
Yeah.
Not
I think as
God
long as long as that's our, as long as that's where we're at, God will lead us to mm-hmm. it. I mean, I think we have a tendency as people to I mean, just like the Pharisees did in Jesus's day, he told them they'd taken their traditions and turned those into their religion. Yeah. And I think we can have a tendency just as people to do that. We love traditions. We love, mm-hmm. we treat them as sacred, whether they're holiday traditions as family or mm-hmm. personal habits, just all kinds of stuff. We can tend to make those what we see as important because they represent what we believe mm-hmm. instead of, because God's abstract. I mean, he's spiritual and we're not. He's mm-hmm. supernatural and we're natural beings. And so we have a tendency to grab onto what we can see and feel and hold on to that a little tighter than what it was based on in the beginning. And so I think we as long as we keep reminding ourselves and have people in our life that will remind us to let God continue to show us, because he's dynamic, he's changing how he's speaking to us, and as we live life, our what he's wanting us to do and how he's wanting us to respond is constantly, going to be evolving. It's like we get a snapshot of it sometimes, but we've got to allow him to continue letting it play like a movie.
Yeah.
So that's I guess what I've kind of seen mm-hmm. is just, trying to make sure I'm allowing him to lead.
Yeah. So you talked about like kind of starting off, working in the ministry quite a few years ago. I mm-hmm. think it was like 15 years or yep. so. So, in that 15 years, like what are, I don't know if you're willing to share, and you can tell me you don't want to talk, but like, what were some pros and cons of like working in the ministry?
I mean, pros are that I got to, well, there's a lot of pros. I mean, mm-hmm. one of the pros is that it didn't matter what I did mm-hmm. because it's God's deal, mm-hmm. So like, right. as long as I was listening to him, then the results were up to him, mm-hmm. So that's kind of a freeing concept. Of course, yeah. There's still, it is a man-made institution in a way, mm-hmm. church services and stuff like that. So there are still, goals and there's still objectives to achieve, and we're still trying to, it's not like you can slack off, but it's just kind of a little bit of a freedom to say, well, if this isn't working, maybe God's trying to show us something mm-hmm. or whatever. I think the cons, one con that I've realized lately is that it really, I put like Sunday morning, it magnified it too much mm. to me. Even though I would try to keep it in perspective and felt like I knew, it's about what happens outside these walls, but yet I still made the Sunday morning thing so big of a deal. Mm-hmm. When really, I mean, I think working in church is a lot. You want to be like that original Acts church, but yet mm-hmm. we're so different than it because of our culture. And so I think it just helped, because I'm recently out of ministry mm-hmm. and starting my own business.
New journey, yeah.
And it's been kind of refreshing to get outside of it and to see like, there's so much more to it, like that small group that a lot of churches do, but even like not because it's part of your church, but because that's what the church really looks like.
Mm-hmm.
The church really is a lot more than the Sunday morning thing.
Right.
And the Sunday morning thing, is really a smaller part of it than I gave it credit for. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
So cool. I think that's one of the downsides of it is just getting sort of tunnel vision right. a little bit about what ministry really looks like. I mean, church does great stuff. Mm-hmm. And, being a part of church, especially recently, and being in charge of things like benevolence, getting mm-hmm. to really minister to people, and that gives an opportunity to speak into their lives and to, really love on them. Those are great things. Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying anything bad about it. It's just that,
sure.
it kind of gave me tunnel vision a little bit about what it meant to be the church.
Right. Well, it's interesting too, because, all three of us volunteer in some capacity and have for a long time. And mm-hmm. and it is tricky too, to, to let that be a time, to have church be a time of fellowship and refreshing and not something that literally wears you and your family out. And I think that's a tricky boundary, but you know, just something be mindful of. So tell us a little bit about your new journey and where you're at right now. I know something came full circle, which I'm excited for you.
So, you know, as I was, you know, coming out of ministry, you know, some people that we met with, you know, one of them said, you need to just do what you love, you know? And, that really hit me. And what I've always wanted to do is fly. And so, you know, I've started taking flying lessons, which that's is cool.
Yeah. Well, that smile on your face.
I've been flying 3 times now.
Okay.
I think I officially landed the plane on my own once so far. I mean, the instructor's always there, like, you know, that's a pretty critical time for someone who's never flown before. So the instructor's always there, you know, correcting if it's not quite there. But I think there was one landing last time I flew where it was like 99% me, and it felt really good.
That's the hardest part.
Yeah,
getting off the ground, flying in the air, and straight. You know, the landing is the hardest part.
Landing is the tricky part. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. Just started that journey, and I don't know what it's going to lead to, but it's something I love to do. So that's what I'm doing.
Good.
Yay. Yep. That's exciting.
It is exciting.
Very cool.
And
well,
cool thing too, that we're here in a place where there's an airport. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's funny. If you look at it on a map, I'm like 2.5 miles from the airport. You know, the airport is literally right across the mountain from me. But to live in a place where I don't have to drive an hour to go to an airport is pretty amazing. So.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, I'm excited to see what happens with all that. So, of course, I could, you know, talk to you forever and other stories and fun things. Mm-hmm. But I really appreciate you just taking the time and just sharing
about your journey. Thank you for giving us your time.
I appreciate you guys.
All right. Well, we're going to let you go and get on with this beautiful, rainy, chilly day. Yes. All right. Well, thanks, John.
Thank you.
Talk to you later.